Welcome to History Counts. History provides the roadmap to the future. If you want to know where you're going, you have to understand where you've been. I'm your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. Plum Island Animal Disease Center is a government research facility located just 2 miles off the coast of Long Island, New York. Since the beginning of the Cold War, scientists at Plum Island have been conducting experiments with the world's deadliest viruses. What is the purpose of these experiments, and have they endangered the general population? Please stay tuned as we put the spotlight on the United States government's activities at Plum Island in this edition of History Counts. You're listening to History Counts. This is your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. Today we're going to take a close look at the United States government's Animal Disease Center at Plum Island. What is the government doing there? Is Plum Island responsible for the spread of Lyme disease and other illnesses? To help us answer these questions, we're very fortunate to have as our guest Michael Christopher Carroll, author of Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Germ Laboratory. Mr. Carroll graduated from the American University in Washington, D.C., and went on to receive his law degree from St. John's University in New York City, where he was editor of the Law Review. Mr. Carroll devoted 7 years to researching the government's activities at Plum Island, and he now practices law in California. Mr. Carroll, thanks very much for being with us today. Where is Plum Island, and why should people be concerned about the government's activities there?
Plum Island, Ken, is situated about just under 2 miles off the east end of Long Island off Orient Point, and about 10 or 11 or so miles south from the coast of Connecticut along the Sound. It's about an 840-acre pork chop-shaped island. And on this island, really for the last past half century, some of the most dangerous pathogens, viruses and bacteria known to man, are researched in a laboratory that is really no better equipped to, in terms of safety, in terms of biohazard, and in terms of security, than a junior high school biology laboratory. Yet it contains some of the most dangerous germs known to mankind.
Now, it's called an animal center. Are some of these diseases contagious to humans?
Every time I respond, it's hard for me to hold back my feelings of disgust when it comes to the way that the our friends at the U.S. Department of Agriculture have described this laboratory for the past 50-some years as an animal disease laboratory. Because folks like you and I and your listeners would normally think, well, that sounds pretty harmless to me. They're just dealing with animal diseases. Unfortunately for all of us, a place like Plum Island, a, quote, animal disease laboratory, works on diseases, really, again, viruses and some bacteria, that affect not only the animals that we know as animals, but also the human animal as well. And many of these diseases are what's called zoonotic diseases, and they can be equally virulent, equally deadly to humans as well as animals. So it is correct to say that as an animal disease laboratory, it is also incredibly and highly misleading, because it gives off the impression that the work they do there cannot affect us as people, and it certainly can.
Could you give us an example of some of the viruses that are worked on there?
Sure. Probably one of the, if not the most dangerous virus there is a virus that very few people would know about unless you did the research and maybe looked online. It's called the Rift Valley Fever Virus. This virus is it's called a VHF, or a viral hemorrhagic fever virus. I like to call it and refer to it as the sort of first cousin of the Ebola virus. It's one of these hemorrhagic bleeding fever diseases that actually killed over 1,000 people in Egypt in the late 70s during an epidemic there near the Aswan River Dam. And it does affect animals and livestock, of course, but it does have terrible, terrible consequences for human beings. It's transmitted by mosquitoes, and they have large quantities of it in virtually unguarded conditions on Plum Island. Some of the other Diseases include African swine fever virus, Japanese encephalitis virus, which is an encephalitis virus similar to West Nile virus, foot and mouth disease, equine encephalitis virus, and really a host of other diseases that affect animals, quote unquote, primarily, but in fact also affect humans as well.
Now, Lab 257, mentioned in the title of your book, refers to one of the labs on Plum Island?
That's right. Lab 257 is the earliest laboratory on the island, and it was actually the property of and instituted by the U.S. Army as a germ warfare laboratory.
Now, in your book, Lab 257, you show that the origins of the Plum Island facility is closely connected to the work of Dr. Eric Traub. Can you talk about Dr. Traub's career and how he eventually became involved in Plum Island?
Eric Traub, this sort of unseemly character that melted into the depths of history and unknown before the book came out. While I was, conducting research at the National Archives and Records Administration in College Park, Maryland, I came upon him basically in a file that had not been opened since it was put there in the 50s and later declassified. Eric Traub was part of what was called Project Paperclip that you or maybe the listeners have heard of, where the United States government, after World War II, secretly essentially smuggled or imported Nazi scientists and engineers to the United States to help the United States conduct the early phases of the Cold War against, of course, Soviet Russia and China. The little-known part of some of these things is that the people that were brought over here, the German Nazis that were brought over here, had some pretty unseemly records and pasts that were conveniently overlooked, and some of them evaded forums like the Nuremberg trials, where arguably some of them deserved to have been tried in the effort to help the United States during the Cold War. So Eric Traub was the top germ warfare scientist during World War II. He reported directly to Heinrich Himmler, the Reichsfuhrer of the SS, and he conducted actually on his own island, which of course was the genesis for the idea to create a offshore island in the United States. He had his own island called Insel Reims in the Baltic Sea, and Traub conducted a number of tests involving food, germ warfare against basically livestock, farm animals, with the idea of starving in this case it would be the Allies, as enemies of their food population. So he conducted a whole series of tests, and what the documents talked about was the Eastern Front. Of course, the Nazi, the German Eastern Front was occupied Russia at the time, and he had a number of trials and germ sprayer trials that they conducted with his handiwork. And after World War II, he was put to work for the Soviets at gunpoint. He was able to escape with his family into West Berlin, and we took him to the United States, and he came with the idea of setting an offensive germ warfare against animals and food population island where research could be conducted ostensibly safely, and that became what we know today as Plum Island.
This wasn't his first time in the United States, though. I understand from your book that in the 1930s, he worked at the Rockefeller Institute in Princeton on viruses.
That's right. Traub spent a good period of time, as actually many Germans did prior to the outbreak of hostilities, in the United States with friends and colleagues, scientific colleagues in the United States, and on the eve of the war returned. But he... one of the most fascinating and overlooked pieces to Dr. Traub's shrouded history is that, as you say, he was a student of one of the most prestigious and, again, one of the most secretive organizations, the Rockefeller Institute, and later today Rockefeller University on York Avenue in Manhattan. And he actually was trained there, and he trained and he was trained with some of the people that basically taught him his craft, and then he returned to Germany.
So he comes to the United States, and he's involved in work for the USDA, you write, the Naval Medical Research Institute, Fort Detrick, the American Biowar Headquarters, and developing weapons-grade viruses. And then he is offered the chief job at Plum Island.
That's correct. Had he taken it, we'd probably be in a different situation today. Certainly his tenure and his identity would have been made more public. Given the treatment of his counterpart in the rocketry field, Wernher von Braun, and the way that he was sort of celebrated throughout the 50s and the host of Disneyland Tomorrowland, exhibits and television shows, and still has a civic center named for him in Huntsville, Alabama, when he, basically overran and oversaw slave labor camps to build V-2 rockets and was a member of the SS. We may know a little more about Traub, but no, indeed, Traub, I would imagine rather smartly from his point of view, declined the initial chairmanship and directorship of the Plum Island Laboratory, and he just sort of stayed in the background.
But he eventually became head of a new biowar facility in Germany, but he did visit Plum Island, you're right.
That's right. That's right. He was the distinguished scientist visitor often at Plum Island. He became a director at a laboratory that was established in West Germany, and then sort of later just ended his tenure under some financial disgrace involving some funds and really some kind of an accounting or financial scandal. He actually had to resign from his position at that laboratory in West Germany.
Now, in your book, you place Dr. Traub in the context of the U.S. biowar program. Well, in 1951, the U.S. military's joint chiefs determined that, quote, the destruction of the enemy's food supply by the use of anti-animal biological warfare agents would be strategic. Immediate action should be taken to procure an island test site where all types of hot agents could be tested, end quote. This is what leads us to Plum Island.
It is. It was the idea, very interesting idea, of which there were many in that early Cold War period for brainstorming, and a lot of very amazing things came to be in that period, many of which we live with today, Plum Island being one of them, and the germ warfare program being a larger part and a subset being Plum Island. But yes, the goal of the Joint Chiefs and the goal of the military, which was to figure out a way to use biological warfare, not against, they also had a human program, but in this instance, what Plum Island became, the offshore offensive germ warfare laboratory, designed not actually for humans, although many of these pathogens do affect and can kill humans, but to work on weaponized viruses and bacteria that could decimate the enemy's food population. So they had some fascinating research that they did. They were the estimates that they did in cooperation with the early CIA in terms of how many calories a Russian farm worker needed to live off, a Russian a secretary in an office, a paratrooper, and what would happen if we wiped out the swine and the cattle livestock in the country and how it would create a starvation scenario. The whole reason, of course, being to force a surrender of the enemy in China or Soviet Russia, and then the outcome being they would simply have the physical plant structure left of the enemy intact, which was a sort of an ingenious view that they would basically wipe out the people but without and get them to capitulate without having to destroy physical structures and plant that they could then use. The U.S. could use in a victory scenario or in an occupation scenario where they couldn't use physical plants they had destroyed, for example, the firebombing of Berlin and the atomic weaponry used against Japan.
So as I understand the process, viruses are brought from off Plum Island to Plum Island, and they're grown in the laboratories. They are used to infect cells, and then the infected cells are then injected into test animals on Plum Island, and the scientists observe the results.
Exactly. That's sort of an abridged version of the type of testing that goes on at Plum Island. There's a large amount of domesticated farm animals that are used as test subjects. sometimes it's even marine life that are used. And exactly, there are pens, there are you know, sort of test rooms that are supposed to be sealed to other test rooms, and then a laboratory that's supposed to be contained to the outside world, the air inside, the infected air, if you will. And that's exactly how the tests are worked on. I mean, there'll be samples of some of these pathogens. They'll infect healthy animals and work on them, and to see what happens with the diseases as they progress through the animals. And then secondly, often the testing of tissue samples and infected animals themselves, pieces of them, if you will, are taken into the laboratory, flown in from all parts of the world. Wherein Plum Island is the only place, or ostensibly the only place in the United States, where exotic diseases that primarily affect animals can be studied, and not on the mainland in the United States.
Well, you cite evidence that germs from Plum Island may have been used by the U.S. in offensive military operations, Cuba in 1971, for example. The main thrust of your book is the accidental release of disease germs into the outside world. In particular, you refer to, quote, the insidious connection, end quote, between Plum Island and the outbreak of various infectious diseases, including Lyme disease and West Nile fever. I'd like to focus on Lyme disease. For those in our audience who are not familiar with Lyme disease, could you explain how it affects the human body?
It's a bacteria. It's called Borrelia burgdorferi. It's a strain of bacteria that is new to the world, but it is a part of a Borrelia family bacteria, a bacteria that was found that was part of bacteria that existed at least at some point in Europe and did not find itself on the soil of the United States until the mid-70s in Old Lyme, Connecticut, when a mysterious outbreak occurred where 23 or so young children in the town of Old Lyme, Connecticut, came down with rheumatoid arthritic conditions, and there was an initial diagnosis of some kind of a juvenile arthritis, and it was later found out to be a completely unique bacteria called Borrelia, and then it was named after the scientist that identified it, Wally Burgdorfer, was in a lab in Colorado, actually, as the strain being Borrelia burgdorferi. It has a number of different from my understanding, not being, again, I'm not a scientist, but I know enough that it really, medically speaking, it wreaks absolute complete havoc, or it can, with the immune functionality of the body, and it can manifest itself in terrible joint pain, to headaches or sensitivity to light, and types of and sort of what makes Lyme disease, which is of course named for Old Lyme, Connecticut, where it first was uncovered, so unique, is that it can manifest itself in many ways. It can go into remission for a number of years and then just kind of come up out of nowhere, and it seems to have a lingering effect. There's no cure for Lyme disease. There was a vaccine for Lyme disease, but it was found to be ineffective, and it was a lot of controversy over that. But there's really no cure for the disease.
You write that it appears to be an inescapable truth. Wild birds and deer contracted Borrelia burgdorferi, the new bacteria that causes Lyme, from ticks impregnated with germs studied on Plum Island. Could you talk about the Plum Island connection?
Absolutely. You know, every investigation is about connecting the dots. At the same time that these children had come down with these strange conditions, you have to understand the geography. Old Lyme, Connecticut, lies in the mouth of the Connecticut River on the Long Island Sound. About 10 or 11 miles or so southwest of that is Plum Island that sits out there, this laboratory. And at that time in the mid-70s when this outbreak occurred, Plum Island had not one but two what they called tick colonies, where they were breeding hundreds and thousands of hard and soft ticks working on a disease called African swine fever. At the same time as this massive tick research was going on, working with this African swine fever virus on pigs, essentially, the laboratory, which was hailed when it first opened in press releases as the world's safest laboratory, with all that, you know, sort of 1950s hubris that you read about often, had become so dilapidated that there were 3/4-inch holes in the laboratory's roof where the air filters were and where there used to be Rudberg gaskets that would seal the laboratory to the outside world. Well, those had cracked and wilted away in the 30 years of preventative. Well, it wasn't preventative. There was no maintenance. And these were basically documents that I had uncovered from the chief engineer of Plum Island. So we have ticks being bred and being worked on. We have a lab that is essentially porous like a sponge when it's supposed to be contained. And then you have birds. You have an avian flight path of literally hundreds of thousands of birds that fly the North American flyway. And they stop there and at the end of Long Island at Gardner's Island and Fisher's Island and Plum Island. And then they fly over to the shore of Connecticut. And many of them fly into the mouth of the Connecticut River. Now, is it conceivable that a tick could have gotten on someone's lab coat and they could have walked out, the tick could have fallen off as the person was walking on the island to over to the ferry to get back to the mainland, and then that tick essentially got into the bird that then, you know, crossed the sound? Absolutely. I mean, that's basically vectors. That's how diseases spread. That's how Lyme disease spread through the entire United States, and that's exactly how West Nile virus has spread through the practically the entire United States. And question then we get is, well, why African swine fever virus? That's not Lyme disease, and of course that's true. But what we need to know, Ken, and what the listeners need to understand, is that when the things that were being tested on in the 70s at that point in the tick colony had to do with infected pigs and tissue samples of already infected animals that were coming in from all parts of the world, from these different, you know, period Europe or Malaysia or deep Africa. And they were brought into this island to be studied. So it's absolutely feasible that this stuff could have been cross-contaminated. It might have been a pig that showed signs of African swine fever or cattle, what have you, with a different disease, and then it could have been cross-contaminated with a whole host of bacteria. Given all those facts, it's contemptible that there was never once a finger pointed or a question of whether, officially speaking, whether Plum Island needed to be investigated as the source of the outbreak of Lyme disease.
And you discovered a 1978 USDA memo indicating that on Plum Island there were experiments with giving viruses to the Lone Star and Cayenne ticks, which were then tested on pigs in 75, the same year that the Lyme disease first appeared. So there is documentation.
Oh, sure. I mean, the Lone Star tick, and, you know, most people know the deer tick because, it sort of had an affinity for deer. But the Lone Star tick, just the same, they're sort of the two ticks that are culprits in the spread of the Lyme disease bacteria. And sure enough, they were working with plenty of those types of ticks at that same exact time.
And there's also the matter of the deer, because they're only 2 miles from Plum Island to the shore of Long Island. The deer can make that swim to Plum Island.
There were many, many deer that inhabited Plum Island, and like you said, yeah, they would swim. A very little-known fact, they could swim a few miles, and deer, basically swam to and fro Gardner's Island, Plum Island, and Orient Point there, and they very easily, a tick could have found its way burrowed into a deer, and the deer could have come to Long Island or one of the other islands, and it could have been transmitted to a bird at that point.
So once the deer, for example, had been infected with a tick from Plum Island, any other tick biting into that deer would then become infected?
That's right. That's right. I mean, and then you have all manner of vermin, anyone trying to either attack the deer or vice versa, the deer maybe trying to, you know, sniff around or play with a bird that had died.
Now, if we could talk for a moment about the West Nile virus, which appeared in the summer of 1999, could you talk about the symptoms, the consequences of that disease?
West Nile virus causes what's called an encephalitis, which is a swelling of the fluid in the brain. And if not properly treated, which it can be, certain agents can be used to reduce that swelling, the brain will literally shut down and almost implode because of the massive pressure being put on it by the swelling of and the expansion of this fluid that's transmitted by the mosquito.
And you say that in the New York City outbreak in the summer of 1999, there were 200,000 cases and almost 400 people died. So it was quite a significant outbreak. There isn't is there a cure for West Nile virus?
No, there's not.
And you have a source on Plum Island who you named as Jim House, who said that West Nile virus was being studied there before 1999, and that Plum Island is the only site where animal germs like West Nile virus are supposed to be studied.
Yeah, they haven't officially come out and said that we studied it there, but, you know, as I stated in the book, I mean, some people have said that they did and recalled that they did, and at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's sort of the only place where, if it's the only place where exotic, non-indigenous animal diseases should be studied, then you would think that they would have some West Nile virus in their freezers there.
What do you think needs to be done to establish definitively the connection between the outbreak of Lyme disease and diseases like West Nile virus and Plum Island?
I think that we need to have sort of an open understanding that the facts when it relates to West Nile virus and when it relates to Lyme disease need to be recognized for what they are. And instead of kind of putting their heads in the sand and saying, there's no way it could have came from Plum Island, it's impossible because of X or Y or Z, none of which really hold up under scrutiny, how about possibly investigating? How about possibly taking a scientifically trained eye and saying, is it possible that these things could have emanated from that island, an island that you know, has more mishaps than you can count, an island that had an outbreak that they finally acknowledged? It was actually referred to only as an incident until about 2 or 3 weeks ago. This was from 1978, and just 2 or 3 weeks ago, the USDA finally acknowledged to a congressional subcommittee that it was indeed an outbreak of foot and mouth disease that came out of the laboratory and infected animals that were clean, if you will, or non-infected in test holding pens on the island. So I think we need investigation. I think we need public disclosure. I think that unfortunately people are so entrenched in the scientific community when it comes to this place, Plum Island, they're just more concerned about, you know, their entrenched positions than they are about the truth.
Mr. Carroll, thanks very much for being with us today. You're listening to History Counts, and we've been talking about the United States government's Animal Disease Center at Plum Island with Michael Christopher Carroll, author of Lab 257, The Disturbing Story of the Government's Secret Germ Laboratory. This is your host, Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'll be right back. The Center for Disease Control reports that from 1991 to 2006, there were approximately 250,000 new cases of Lyme disease in the United States. Although concentrated in the Northeast, Lyme disease has spread to 49 of the 50 states. In 1972, the United States signed an international convention prohibiting the development and production of biological weapons and requiring the destruction of existing stockpiles of such weapons within 9 months. The convention took effect in 1975, the year that Lyme disease first appeared. Thank you for joining us. History Counts is broadcast on the first Thursday of the month at 12:30 p.m. and on the first Sunday of the month at 10 p.m. It's produced by MDR Productions, Inc., and engineered by David Schwartz. Please visit us at historycounts.org, where you can listen for free to an archive of our programs. Until next time, this is Ken McDermott Rowe for History Counts.